Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is your host for the hour, Danny Nezvedarani. And I'm so very happy to be here on this Tuesday morning. Speak Up. Hope you all had a fantastic weekend, possibly long weekend for many of you. And before we get started with today's episode of Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM, I just want to acknowledge that all of our programs here at CJSF are broadcasted on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hoklamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. We have some interviews and some news content coming from us here at CJSF this hour, but before we get into any of that, let's start off this morning with some local music. This is Chopping Spree, a band that has been steadily climbing up here at CJSF, and for good reason, and you're about to find out right now. This is their track Koi Fish off of their latest album by the name of Anamoya. Once again, this is CJSF 90.1 FM with your host Danny Nezvedarani. Take a listen to Koi Fish by Chopping Spree.
Thank you.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nesvetarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. With the passing of 5 years since the British Columbia heat dome, both CAPE, the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment, and CANE, the Canadian Association of Nurses for the Environment, have sent a letter to Burnaby City Council calling on the city to enact greater protections against extreme heat for the city's residents. The specific asks of the letter include following neighboring municipality New Westminster's lead by requiring landlords and property owners to provide at least one living space per rental unit that does not exceed 26 degrees Celsius, increasing cooling green spaces, establishing and promoting public cooling centers with 24 access during extreme heat events, supporting the installation of electric heat pumps in existing buildings, and finally, working to address the root cause of climate change and extreme heat, the burning of fossil fuels, by phasing out natural gas, supporting development of renewable energy. To learn more about this letter and what CAPE and CANE are advocating for, we sat down for a conversation with Agnes Black, a BC representative for CANE, and Ashley Stoltz, another member of CANE as well as a nurse in Burnaby.
I'm Ashley. I'm a registered nurse and a member of the Canadian Association of Nurses for the Environment. I'm currently a co-chair for the Education Committee, and I'm going back to school for a master's to study climate change and health.
And I'm Aggie or Agnes Black. I'm a recently retired registered nurse. I was a registered nurse for 30 years and practiced in a variety of different settings. And I'm currently on the national board for Canadian Association of Nurses for the Environment.
And are you able to provide just some background on this letter that was sent to Burnaby City Council regarding increasing the protections for residents when it comes to extreme heat?
I can say a little bit about, like, from the perspective of someone who lives in New West. I lived here during the heat dome 5 years ago, so a lot of this has come to recent attention because of the five-year anniversary of the heat dome. So New West lost more people per capita than any other town in BC on that day, 33 people. And so the city council has been working ever since then to try to come up with ways to make sure that doesn't happen again. And most recently, so they've done a whole series of things. We've got a pretty active climate plan, climate action plan for the city. And one of the things they did most recently is pass an indoor heat bylaw, which requires landlords to provide at least one cooling spot in each apartment. And so they've built a lot of cooling centers. They've put up signage in multiple languages. They've promoted the cooling centers. They've planted trees, particularly that, like, the tree planting has been in the areas that are densest, lowest income, and have the least tree canopy. So they've done a lot of efforts that are, like, to help people today and then things that will be helpful in 10 years when these trees, you know, really are providing some shade. So a lot of it really came out of feeling so shocked and horrified, you know, that the heat dome, I think, for the city of New West was like a sign that climate change isn't something that's coming out in the future. It's here right now. And CANE has been concerned about it for a long time, but that, for a lot of people who haven't been working on it regularly, was just a huge wake-up call. So a lot of the calls that are in that letter are things like enact indoor heat bylaws, increase tree canopy, increase cooling centers, and then help rental buildings know how to retrofit and support them to do it with efficient things like heat pumps, which are electric and give people heating and cooling, and provide subsidies for landlords to do that.
Is this ask being specifically put out to Burnaby, or are Cape and Cane also sending similar letters to other neighboring municipalities throughout the Lower Mainland?
Definitely to neighboring municipalities as well. Yeah. Okay. I actually can't remember how many cities we sent it to, but a lot of this is also based on calls from the Health Officers Council. Are you familiar with that group? It's all the public health physicians in the whole province of BC, and they meet, they represent health authorities, and they meet maybe once a month, and they'll often issue a statement of something they think is of concern to the health, about the health of everyone in the province. So they, probably 2 years ago now, maybe three, said we need an indoor heat bylaw. So a lot of what we're saying is in that letter is also backed up by the Health Officers Council, which gives it a little extra oomph.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard anything yet from the city, from Burnaby City Council or any city staff regarding this? Do they seem receptive to what's being asked for?
I think it was 18th. I sent an email, an initial email, bringing up two different concepts. But one of them was this indoor heat bylaw. And we kind of strategically sent it to a few people that we thought were champions, like city councilors that were championing climate change action, or that were really involved in housing, so that there could be some synergy. But because this is, how does climate change and housing, what's the interface look like? So we did actually hear a brief response from Daniel, and he said that he would discuss it with his colleagues, but we haven't heard back after that. So we're still waiting on that.
And I don't think Cape or Kane have gotten a response, you know, as an organization.
Yeah, that was from Kane earlier, and then Cape followed up with this email with a few physicians and Eggy as well, and this letter. And I don't think they've heard back from this letter either. We're waiting on them.
Have you been hearing from Burnaby residents in general that are also, you know, not necessarily part of your organization, but just have had to deal with the heat, that have, I guess, personal accounts for why this is necessary?
That's a really good question.
We do have a group right now who has come together, and it does include two residents who are not members of Kane, I think. Yep. And so I made sure to CC them in that initial email that was from Kane specifically, letting them know that there are other concerned residents. We're hoping to form a delegation eventually. Iggy, what were you going to say?
I was thinking about the people I've met who were impacted by the heat dome. So the woman who spoke publicly is from Victoria, I believe, and she had woke up having a heart attack on the day of the heat dome because of the heat. And even though they have the funding for her to move to a hotel room where she could get air conditioning, the process had already started, and her husband had to drive her to emergency. And that's the only way she said, you know, I lived because of, we had money. We had enough money to have a van to drive me to emerge, because the wait at that point during the heat dome was 12 hours to get an ambulance to you, and she could have died. And also she said, because we had the money to get a hotel room, because they live in a house that didn't have air conditioning, and she has some underlying conditions that predisposed her. But the first system that really kind of goes haywire when your body is not able to cool itself effectively is your heart. There's just all this extra work on your heart. So anybody that's got underlying heart conditions is at huge risk. And people who live alone, like the 73 people, I think, died in Burnaby.
Yeah.
During that heat dome. So those are mostly seniors, mostly people who lived alone, mostly low income. And they just die very quietly. You know, there's nobody's checking in on them, and they don't realize just how sick they are, and they die essentially in their sleep. But they're all preventable deaths. You know, that's the thing I keep going back to when I think about the heat dome, is that these were preventable. These are, you know, developmentally disabled, mentally ill, lower income seniors who are just living in these buildings that are just complete heat traps. I see them as I walk around my neighborhood, these sort of four-story concrete apartment buildings with no shade from the trees and no air conditioning, unless you can afford to put one in your window of one room, which a lot of people just can't. Or it's not like the building structurally, you can't, don't have a window that you could fit one in, or you don't know how to do that, or your landlord is discouraging it. I believe now landlords cannot ban air conditioning. They can't prevent people from putting it in unless the building doesn't have the electrical capacity, or it would require somebody, you know, to cut a hole in the wall. You can't do that.
Yeah, it was a pretty shocking statistic to me to learn that out of the 619 deaths that were reported in the Lower Mainland, 98% of them were like indoors in homes without adequate cooling. Like you would expect more of a maybe a balance between indoor and outdoor, but it was overwhelmingly indoors. And New Westminster has really stepped up. Like per capita, they did have the most deaths with 33, but Burnaby had more at 73. So we're hoping that Burnaby will follow in the footsteps of New Westminster and step up to create a maximum temperature indoor bylaw that applies to its residents.
I mean, essentially 5 years after the heat dome, why do you think that there is, has been such a what seems to be a delay in just simple things like that, like a maximum temperature bylaw for indoor spaces and things of that nature? The advocacy has definitely been there, so I guess has it just taken a while for municipalities to react? It does seem like the summers are getting hotter, and it's not necessarily something that people have had to deal with past maybe like a decade or so ago. So do you think it is just municipalities learning in real time like how to grapple with that new reality essentially?
Yeah, I think people are still shocked that we need air conditioning in this climate. I moved to BC 21 years ago and bought a house that doesn't have air conditioning. It never crossed my mind at that time that we would need it. So I think there's the people are still surprised we need it. There's also the huge cost. Like a lot of the building stock in my neighborhood would be really expensive to retrofit with heat pumps, which is what would need to happen essentially. So, and I also think that when cities enact those bylaws, there's probably some concern about how they're going to be enforced. You know, how are landlords going to sue the city for forcing them to do expensive upgrades? And then in Toronto, I read that one of the reasons they're delayed in enacting a bylaw is because they're afraid of rent evictions, you know, that a landlord will say, okay, I'm going to spend $300,000 and retrofit this building, but I'm going to pass the cost on to you. So, one of the things Victoria is working directly with the Minister of Housing on is how can we write a bylaw where that will prohibit landlords from passing all this cost on to these tenants who are often low income and don't have any, like, there aren't any other good options. It's not like we're full of low-income housing in New West where they can all move to that has air conditioning. So I think it's partly the cost, and partly we're still people don't are still kind of in shock that we keep having summers that are this hot. And the other thing that Kane and CAPE are really concerned about is that people aren't going upstream and making the connection that we have heat domes because we have climate change, and we have climate change because we won't stop burning fossil fuels. So at a time of, 5 years commemorating this atrocious thing that happened, our government in BC is going full steam ahead with building fossil fuel infrastructure like LNG plants, which is, in my mind, the absolute wrong direction to go in. You know, it's saying, we're so sorry that 619 people died, but right now we're just going to keep on this path. Like, how many people have to die before the government says, okay, we get it. We cannot continue on this path. We have to turn towards clean electricity and create clean electricity jobs and move away from fossil fuels. I have not seen nearly enough of action, particularly from the provincial government on that. New West is actually curbing their emissions. They've got the part of that climate plan is to say, we're going to. The city buildings are being made greener. The city fleet of cars is being made greener. They're doing a lot of things that are reducing emissions, but are so much of that good work is undone by LNG, expanding the Tilbury LNG plant right in our backyard, which increases emissions, increases air pollution in our airshed. Yeah, even if we did start bending the curve and reducing our emissions, we're still going to need adaptation for quite a while. So, I feel like we really need our governments to take action on both, to curb emissions, stop burning fossil fuels, but also help particularly lower income people adapt to, increasing extreme weather events and heat and wildfire smoke and everything else that's still going to be with us for a few more years, even if we do the right things upstream, which I'm still hopeful we will do.
I just wanted to quickly say, Aggie, I think that you and like the residents of New Westminster should be so proud of their city council for being the leaders in this. And I think that all I have to say is that I think it is going to be really important moving forward that city councils kind of learn how to collaborate, because this is like, not to overuse the word unprecedented, but it is very unfamiliar territory. And it's something that we're going to have to learn how to adapt to, because it's going to continue until we kind of manage to, as Aggie said, like turn the corner and curb our emissions a lot. So it's really important that something happens where the city councils work together to kind of collaborate and decide how to move forward best.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
The last question I had for both of you is just, what are Cape and Kane's next steps in regards to advocating for greater protections to extreme heat outside of these letters?
So we're trying to get other cities to, Kane members in other cities, to tackle this. So starting with Burnaby, Ashley and a couple of her colleagues are going to keep working with city council there. We've also got, and we have members across BC. So we're encouraging people, whatever city you live in, we're kind of saying, here's a template. New West has already done this. Like Ashley said, you know, we have an indoor heat bylaw. Nobody needs to reinvent the wheel. So I would say we're going to keep pushing for that. We're also really, really, really encouraging people to vote. 29% of registered voters voted in New West's last municipal election, which to me is just a sorry state of affairs. So I really want people to vote, and I want them thinking about who are the climate champions. So we don't endorse any particular candidates, but we do ask candidates. We just sent out a questionnaire to all the city council candidates and both mayoral candidates in New West, asking where they stand on climate change. And then we're going to publish that so that when people are thinking about who they are going to vote for, make sure climate is on the ballot. So I would say we're really encouraging people to vote. We're encouraging them to work with their city councils more closely on things like cooling centers, indoor heat bylaws, retrofits, tree canopy. And then just keep letting politicians know that we are concerned about climate change and we want emissions curbed. We want to go up. We want upstream thinking.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out in regards to how city council responds to this in particular.
Great. Yeah, we'll come. We'll send you something if we end up getting some movement there. You can Perfect. Do a little follow up story.
Yeah, that would be great.
I was just going to ask Aggie if you wanted to talk about how Kane and Cape are like really actively working upstream. Like, we don't just talk about moving upstream. Like, they really are working upstream to address the root cause of climate change, which is burning fossil fuels, by advocating for reducing LNG like infrastructure development and communicating with communities who are impacted, learning about the health impacts that people are currently living through because of climate change, and sort of elevating the voices of people whose voices often go unheard. I feel that that's work that we've been doing for a long time and will continue to do.
Kane members have been speaking out across BC, like particularly in areas where there's fracking and LNG, to say this has immediate health impacts, negative health impacts. Like, fracking produces lots and lots of poisoned water, uses a ton of water, and fracking is necessary if you're going to produce LNG. And there's also increasing research showing rates of diseases are increasing around fracking and LNG plants. There's also, I don't know if you've followed any of the news from Kitimat, of these huge plumes that are way beyond what the LNG plant is allowed to produce. So there's a nurse in Kitimat who's been extremely outspoken and calling on his city council to sign on to this provincial call for an independent cumulative health impact assessment, just saying LNG is not good for us because it increases emissions, but is also really harmful to the health of workers and their families who live around it. So we are trying to go upstream and help people connect the dots and see that, you know, it isn't enough to just say, let's build a cooling center. We've got to stop burning fossil fuels. And we also think there's lots and lots of great jobs that can be created by, you know, an energy transition, like moving to clean green electricity in BC could produce some incredibly great jobs for people in solar, wind, and geothermal.
And I think Kane and Cape will hopefully continue to be leaders in connecting the dots between climate change and health, which sometimes doesn't seem that apparent at first, but it's really important in ways that people may not realize. So,
once again, that was our conversation with Agnes Black and Ashley Stoltz, both members of the Canadian Association of Nurses for the Environment. We spoke about the recent letter that Kane and CAPE, the Canadian Association of Physicians for the Environment, sent to Burnaby City Council, advocating for greater heat protections for Burnaby residents. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. Once again, thank you to CAPE and Kane for first, you know, responding to our initial inquiry for an interview, but then thank you as well to Aggie Black and Ashley Holtz for agreeing to speak with us for that interview on their bid towards Burnaby City Council, but not just Burnaby City Council, other neighboring municipalities as well, regarding increasing heat protections, something that is just becoming more and more pertinent year by year, essentially. All right, let's move on to the next piece of the hour. This is coming from our friends at CHLY in Nanaimo, BC. It is from their community journalist, Lauren McKenzie. And it is a story that is specifically about... Sorry, let me just... is a story about something called the Sunflower Program, which could help support those with hidden disabilities in Nanaimo. Let's take a listen.
This is a CHY News update. Local nonprofits are encouraging the city of Nanaimo to join an internationally recognized program to support people with hidden disabilities. The Hidden Disability Sunflower Network first launched at Gatwick Airport in London, England in 2016. Created by the airport and other local charities, the program allows people with non-apparent or hidden disabilities to wear a green lanyard with bright yellow sunflowers to show that they may need extra support or care when in the airport. The program was quickly picked up by other organizations and airports around the world who handed out the sunflower lanyards and trained staff on how to support those with disabilities. In 2022, the Nanaimo Airport joined the network of those using the sunflower lanyard. Now, two local organizations that support people with developmental disabilities are encouraging the city of Nanaimo to join the network and adopt the sunflower symbol at city-owned facilities.
I read recently that the city of Squamish, in their tourism offices, have adopted the symbol as well and have adopted the program. And it made me think that different cities and different types of businesses could also adopt the program.
That was Alexandria Stewart, executive director at Clay Tree Society. Stewart says she and her family know the Sunflower Program very well. Her son has a